The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Does it tame and tame and tame again?
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
How late is too late to start wondering if it's not going to be Team X's day? Can you be back on your old stomping ground if it was knocked down and another one built on top of it? Premature glimmers of hope. Les Ferdinand at Besiktas before it was cool. Big momentum. Could a Panenka volley lob be physically possible? And Keys and Gray shake things up a bit with Big Sam. Brought to your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 202 of Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry and with me for the adjudication panel today is David Walker. How's it going?
Very well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad actually. Good weekend too for Christian Cabaselli of Watford, who after the win over Luton tweeted that the M1 is yellow. How do you feel about that?
Well, he's got previous for this. He did it in the last time we beat Luton in 2 seasons ago. He tweeted something about, which has been since been turned into a T-shirt, some slogan, something to do with local men being pleased. But I'm all for the M1 being yellow. Better than it being orange. Yeah. Luton had won.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Like one big double yellow line, though.
It's sort of logistically easier to do as well than, you know, X City is red. That's just going to be a pain in the ass to do. But you could feasibly paint a motorway yellow quite easily, I think, couldn't you?
Yeah, claiming the connecting road between the two places for yourself is perhaps more of a salt in the wound, perhaps. Anyway,
in both directions?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I suppose it should be, really. Yeah, you can't really pick one. But anyway, that voice you could hear interjecting was our fellow adjudication panellist, Nick Miller. A good weekend for you, presumably, too.
Lovely, yes. Yeah, although I have been sort of dealing with the pressure of having to follow Shrevesy on this podcast, which is kind of weighing heavily.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I have been slightly rattled by Jeff Shreves.
You sounded the bit where you said shut up. That was quite rattly.
Yeah, it was. That's fine. There were moments where it almost got to that stage. But I was rattled in particular, Nick, by Shreves' rather one dimensional impression of the purpose of this podcast. Yeah, we have got steadily more pedantic, but I'm not sure that's the right vibe. There's an affection for what we're being pedantic about that I don't think he quite grasped. And I think that might have been at the crux of what people found quite uncomfortable in some cases.
Oh, has there been kickback?
Yeah. I'd say it's about 50-50. Very, very tidily 50-50. Dave, we would have settled for that before kickoff, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think, to be fair to Jeff, whilst it's fair to say that he didn't quite get it, but he certainly tried. He was very prepared, very professional. According to, he claims that he listened to a number of episodes before to try and get the sort of idea of what we were after.
Yeah.
And the only other thing I will say in his defense as well is that, and I felt this when I was editing it, having watched the recording of the podcast on the Zoom, it was all done with a bit of a smile on his face. He was at least trying to sort of have some fun with it. It didn't quite come across in the same way in the audio-only experience.
Twinkle in his eye, did we?
Yeah. I can understand why some people were a bit perturbed by what they were hearing.
We won't release the video. We won't release the video. But a rare Meza Hollandic's guest who rang me the next day for a little debrief. So that's how much he was invested into it. Won't reveal the contents of that conversation either. Right, let's start at the City Ground, Nick. Yes, it was a good day for you. Good day for Nottingham Forest. But some troubling scenes right at the end. Listener Neil Rigg writes in and says, is 89 minutes and 45 seconds too late for this?
Alexander-Arnold swings one in. Van Dijk coming in. Oh, it's gone right across the face of goal. And you start to wonder whether it's going to be Forest Day.
Oh, yes. I mean, Liverpool.
Tricky one to pinpoint this, Nick. But I would say, knocking on the door of 90 minutes, you don't probably have to start wondering this sort of thing. You when do we start wondering this sort of thing?
Yeah, instinctively, it's got to be at least kind of 10, 15 minutes earlier than that. But I don't know, the disparity between the quality of the two teams, is the period where you assume Liverpool were going to score extended by that? I don't know.
Hmm.
But yeah, you start to wonder. It has to be kind of, I'm going to say 75 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking
at the latest.
75 sounds about right, Dave, to me.
Yeah, I think you could even go earlier, depending on the nature of the play.
That's true.
If it was a particularly unlucky day for one, you know, for the team chasing or whatever, and it's the start here that Fletch uses. The fact that it's this, you're only starting to wonder.
You're not leaving yourself much time to complete the wondering, are you?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's the problematic bit for me.
Is it more of a kind of number and quality? I mean, like they said, a number and quality of chances thing rather than time, because you could, if say like by 60 minutes Liverpool have had like five or six very clear-cut chances, you could start to wonder then, surely.
Yeah, I would say so, definitely. There's leeway to go early with it, but you can't be too late. Next up, Ruben Pinder has sent me this clip from an interview he did with Ben Foster recently, where the custodian turned YouTube enthusiast had this to say about Edwin van der Sar.
Well, he signed when he was 35, ended up staying until he was 40. And even then, he was a Rolls-Royce, honestly. Not even as a person, because he was a Rolls-Royce as a person. Seriously, the loveliest man. And I learned so much from him. But on the pitch, he was the most natural, effortless goalkeeper I've seen.
Dave, I mean, I worry about this on several levels. First of all, it's a Rolls-Royce of a goalkeeper, then a Rolls-Royce of a human being, the two combined. And then when you think about Edwin van der Sar, he ticks a lot of boxes.
Mm.
He's very sort of languid kind of guy. Doesn't seem very excitable. Yeah. Seems quite Rolls-Royce-y.
Yeah, there's a touch of class to him, isn't there, that you would associate with Rolls-Royces. I'm interested in Rolls-Royce of a human being.
Mm.
We're well experienced at what makes a Rolls-Royce of a football player, if you know, albeit not having discussed it in terms of being a goalkeeper. But
someone who just purrs at you.
Yeah, moves around, not rushed. Does everything in his own time, but really well.
Yeah.
I guess that's sort of, you know.
Tidy.
Yeah, and that's probably why he's a...
executive,
he's sort of high up in the football structure at Ajax, yeah.
Nick, I fear that Edwin van der Sar, as a footballer, is too lanky to be a Rolls-Royce. He can't be a lanky Rolls-Royce.
Yeah, he's lanky and a bit awkward and not particularly graceful. I don't think you can be. Okay. I don't think you can be a Rolls-Royce if you are a little bit kind of all elbows and legs and stuff. So Rolls-Royce of a human being, though, I'm just picturing him like standing with his sort of head and chest thrust forward and his arms behind his back, like he's trying to be the little thing that's on the front of the
right,
Rolls-Royce. I don't know what you call that.
The mark, I believe they're called.
Okay, sure. I'll take your word for that.
Could be wrong. We'll ask Jess Shreves. Yeah. Okay. It falls again under the category of know what he means, but we do need to watch this sort of thing. Right. Next up, the Premier League is influencing baseball. Nick, the New York Yankees' Aaron Judge hit a home run the other day and kissed the badge of his shirt, or his jersey, I should say. He said, "It was for the fans. I've been watching a lot of Premier League soccer games, and I think that kind of got the best of me. The fans brought the energy tonight from the very first pitch." Is badge kissing not a thing in US sport then? And then the more I think about it, it doesn't feel very US sport to kiss the badge.
No, I don't think it is, but this is also, and this is where my kind of American sports knowledge will come in here, the rare opportunity for this. This is particularly interesting because he... As of like now, the Yankees got knocked out of the playoffs last night. As of now, he's a free agent. He is. They call it testing the free market, whereby he can basically negotiate with any other club that he wants, and he's going to sign somewhere for an absolutely colossal amount of money. So he's
kissing the badge on his way out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, potentially that could be his last act as a Yankee, kissing the badge. Is that acceptable? Don't think so.
No, I don't think it is at all. But it's a curious thing. It just doesn't strike me as a particularly American thing at all, Dave.
No.
I can't think of a single other US sport where I can imagine them kissing the badge. I mean, American football, I guess, logistically quite difficult with the helmet, but I suppose you could take it off.
Do they? I was thinking about it. I think they do that sometimes. But do all the jerseys have the team logos on them in like NFL?
Baseball, they certainly do. Yeah.
Surely
it doesn't seem to me it's not like as traditional as it like the club crest or the club badge is such a such an important thing.
They don't really do the heraldry thing over there, of course. And franchises, they can move at a moment's notice. I guess there isn't the same level of connection. Maybe they would kiss their university team's crest. Maybe.
It'd be an absolute nightmare with a basketball vest as well, because you just kind of you have to look for it all the time. The item of clothing is too flimsy to do that, surely.
That's right. Yeah, definitely. Maybe it's just not practical over there in the US. Right, next up, James Randall and Kevin Kelleher both alerted me to this. This was commentator Stephen Wyeth on Match of the Day duty for Liverpool versus West Ham last midweek.
That's got a bit of backspin. Nunez is in business and it's instinctive. It's brilliant. And it's drawn a wonderful save out of Lucas Fabianski. Darwin Nunez, once he's seen the whites of the post, was not afraid to let fly. First time really in the game that Salah has got away from the West Ham defence and seen the whites of the post, but he also quickly saw an advancing goalkeeper.
The whites of the post, Nick.
I think that seems fine, doesn't it? I mean,
it's not a thing though, is it?
It's not a thing. No. But I don't know. Again, is this vague bells ringing? This is an American sports thing as well. You know, let's say the white of the goal line or something when they're going for a touchdown. No? Have I made that up completely? Possibly.
He's gone for the singular as well, the whites of the post.
Yeah.
In one of the examples there. And you initially obviously think he's going to say like the whites, once you've seen the whites of the goalkeeper's eyes.
Yeah, which I really like. I mean, it's a real kind of traditional one, but I really like it. But my real problem with this, Dave, is that you can see the whites of the goalposts from anywhere. Like the opposition goalkeeper can see the whites of the far goalposts. That's not impressive.
Presumably one of the reasons why they are indeed white.
High
visibility.
How do you feel about goalposts that had those little black markings at the bottom of them, sort of 1978 World Cup kind of era? What was the reason for that?
No idea. That is literally the first time I've ever heard of such.
Interesting.
Yeah,
no,
I know what you mean, but I've never really thought about. Yeah, why? What's the point?
Yeah, I'd love to know. I bet there is a very good explanation for it. We'll find out one day.
Right. When you started playing that clip, I thought he said Nunez is in business, and I thought we were going to have another sort of lengthy discussion of what in business means. But you know, the whites of the post came and took it over.
Yeah, exactly. That was very almost like a For My Sins corner there. I see you. Good to see you're in that mode at all times. No For My Sins corner today, sadly. Right. Aston Villa's 4-goal thrashing of Brentford on Sunday, Nick. Now, regardless of whether we can count caretaker Aaron Danks as being eligible for the new manager bounce phenomenon, probably not. This win, 19 shots, 11 on target, 4 goals, probably veers into the kind of where was this performance 2 weeks ago kind of territory. The sort of thing Keezy would get irritated by, I think.
Yeah, the players owe the former manager an explanation there, etc. and so on. It felt like a very sort of release the shackles performance. Villa obviously struggled to score goals before, 3 goals in the first 20 minutes or whatever it was. You know, the just freeing from the kind of oppressive yoke of the former manager.
So it didn't perhaps meet the new manager bounce threshold, Dave, given the circumstances, but equally, it didn't feel appropriate for any interviewer to ask him, it's easy, this managerial lark, isn't it? It's too early, it's too soon since the departures of his entire backroom set of colleagues for him to express any joy about being in charge, right?
Yeah, and the fact that he's only been in, it was only Thursday night, wasn't it, that Gerrard got sacked, obviously, so it's still quite fresh, but I think the bounce has started. I mean, I think it is quite bouncy.
It could be part of the bounce, but it isn't, it isn't yet.
We do need to see, exactly, you need to maybe wait another one or two games. I watched the highlights on Match of the Day 2 last night, and you're right, they weren't quite as easy, this managerial lot. They didn't go quite the whole hog, but it is, you can feel that they are sort of itching to give him the job almost already.
Really?
People talk about on the highlights, they were like...
That's madness.
I think the highlights ended with them saying, and Aaron Danks is available, when talking about potential successors to Steven Gerrard.
Well, if they beat Newcastle on Sunday, that, Nick, I think would be a perfect opportunity for it's easy, this managerial arc, isn't it? If they are going to use it, it would have to be then.
100%, yeah. And has anyone asked them at any point if he'd be interested in the permanent job?
Again, I don't think we're into hat into ring territory here.
Well,
they need to be two or three games in.
They did ask him, again, on Match of the Day, and it was a complete straight down the line. I've been asked to lead the team. Yeah. And it's just full focus on that until that, here otherwise.
That is textbook caretaker manager chat for the first one. I've been asked to take the team. And that was quite literally the case. Yeah, it's too arrogant to look ahead any further ahead. Just 2 days and one game in. Right, next up at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which is very relevant, actually, because Tom Weir asks that the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium has just been described as Kieran Trippier's old stamping ground. Adjudication on whether this is allowed, given he never played there for Spurs. Now, we have an issue here. Dave, I'm sure we've discussed this before about, you know, the new stadium is built on the footprint, more or less, of the old stadium. Can it still be someone's stamping ground, or indeed, stomping ground?
No, I don't. It doesn't feel right to me because, as you say, I know it's in the same geographical location, twisted 90 degrees or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's crucial too.
It's not. Yeah, it doesn't. He never played in that stadium. Yeah. Or Spurs. I think that is the bottom line. Is Wembley one of his old stomping grounds?
Well, interestingly, I was discussing this the weekend about how allowable this would be, Nick, and someone said Wembley kind of gets special dispensation about this. Old Wembley and New Wembley are almost merged in terms of this sort of narrative. So, you know, he scored a great goal here, for example, would be acceptable new and old Wembley. So I think Wembley gets kind of the diplomatic immunity, royal protection perhaps, but I'm borderline about this one. I feel like it's okay. I feel like stomping ground is a fairly vague concept. It doesn't have to be the surrounds of a specific stadium.
Yeah, I think it's fine because he could have stomped on literally the same bit of ground, it being on the same thing. So yeah, I think it's fine as well.
Well, but isn't, so like if you've been to the stadium, like the on the concourse, there's a plaque on the floor.
Yeah.
To designate the old centre spot, I think.
Okay. Mm.
So it's not even the same bit of pitch, is it? It's not the same.
It sort of is.
If he was at the bar, that's his old stomping ground.
Wow. He didn't take kickoff, though, did he? So, wow. I don't know. I think he might end up in the same coordinates. So yeah. That could be it. Anyway, yeah, we have other things to dig into. Meanwhile, in the 54th minute with Newcastle 2-0 up, Spurs have a corner.
Son with a corner. What a flick back, and it's there! Harry Kane follows it in at the far post. Spurs have a glimmer of hope.
Not having glimmer here, Nick. I will not accept that the 54th minute at home for the team that were probably the bookies' favourites to win the game, despite being 2-0 down, for this to be a glimmer of hope. Doesn't matter what the score was in the end, the fact that he didn't get back and claim a point. It's not a glimmer.
Yeah, glimmer of hope is you're 3-0 down and there's like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes to go or something like that, isn't it? Mm. Can you have glimmer of hope when you're 2-0 down in any circumstances? I suppose if it's like 89th minute or something.
Interesting that you've set some sort of benchmark here, because listener Paul writes in, Dave, and says, for me, the window of hope here should be two goals down and then scoring the 85th. So if we employ some sort of vague algebra here, I reckon it should be, the margin that you've reduced it to should be no more than 5 times less than the minutes left in the game. So if you brought it back to 1 goal deficit, that's 85 minutes. A 2 goal deficit, that's not enough, is it? 80 wouldn't... no, it's not, is it? Oh, bollocks. As Nick said, if you were 3-0 down and you pulled a goal back, that would need to be 70, 75, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so definitely.
It goes up exponentially.
In the 54th minute, this is solidly back in the game. It's game on territory.
Game on. Probably game on.
Yeah.
Just after half time. So you've got the factoring in of the, I don't know what you said to them, a half time kind of situation. So this is pure game on. I'm really disappointed.
Is it? I mean, can we make allowances for the sort of standard of Tottenham's performance, which was pretty bad? And in the first half, particularly, and we're not counting the rest of the game here, but they were. Very firmly the second best until
that.
That
could be factored in.
But I think still, 54 minutes or whatever it was is still too early. But
what I will say is it was quite a glimmery of hope goal.
A set piece is, I suppose, punch's chance kind
of
situation.
Scrambled in at the back post with a stooping header. Like it looked like a glimmer of hope goal.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, now, we're all aware of the idea that clubs' Twitter accounts can put a positive spin on things, Nick. You will have seen Callum Wilson's goal where he collided with Hugo Lloris in a situation that could feasibly have been given as a foul, but it wasn't, and I think probably quite justified. The Newcastle Twitter account described it as Shah plays an incredible pass through to Wilson, who holds off Lloris and finishes beautifully with the chip to 25 yards. Jack Sanders writes and says the Newcastle admin describing it as holding off Lloris when in fact he wasn't, and it was a clash between the two. Also, can an outfield player hold off a goalkeeper? Two separate issues here, but I'm more interested in the second one. You can't hold off a goalkeeper in any situation. I won't have
I don't know. What about when that thing that teams do when they from a corner, when they stick a striker right on the goalkeeper and just try not to let him move anywhere? Is that not holding off?
Well, I mean, that is literally holding off, but in a footballing context where you kind of hold off and shrug off a challenge. I'm just not having it. I mean, notwithstanding the quite clearly positive spin they're putting on this situation.
The only time it could happen is if in like one of these very rare occasions where like somehow the was sort of similar-ish to when, you know, the position that Lloris found himself in. If the goalkeeper is somehow stranded miles from goal and there's like he's sort of racing, trying to, sometimes they sort of try and do a recovery challenge, don't they? Sort of sliding challenge.
Yeah.
That you could sort of hold off the keeper in that regard, but it's so rare.
Technically true, but it's too everyday to use for what is an absolutely, you know, emergency situation. I won't have it. Anyway.
And it's definitely not the right description here either. I mean, it's obvious. No,
didn't hold him. If he had held him, then that would have been a foul. So the whole point of it is that it was not deliberate at all. Now, a very obvious candidate to stick up for Callum Wilson in this situation was Les Ferdinand in the Sky studio, Nick. Perhaps one of the most likely pundits in existence to talk semi-jokingly about the Strikers' Union. And in doing so, he said, "I paid into the Strikers' Union for years." The first glimpse we've ever had of the administrative functions of various positional unions. This is great. How much? How much do you reckon it is?
This has gone up since last season. What's going on?
I bet it's the same all the way down to Sunday League, Dave, as well. Like, just like yellow cards.
Yeah. One game for everyone.
Yeah, too right. Too right. But with Les Ferdinand in the studio, they were obliged, Dave, to ask him about his career. So they had a little chat about QPR, a little chat about Besiktas, which I'm always interested in. Ferdinand's loan spell at Besiktas. And turns out they had a chant for him at Besiktas. Let's hear it. First of all, this is some Besiktas fans singing their Les Ferdinand chant. Quite tuneful, to a certain extent. Could be better, but just let me examine the lyrics for you. Mujde, mujde, sije, Ferdinandan, mujde, sije, Zarif salam, esnek, koya, rahat, koya, mujde. Now, I stuck this through Google Translate. And Nick, this is what it spat out. Good news, gospel to you. Good news from Ferdinand to you. Elegant, sturdy, flexible puts. Puts comfortably. Good news.
I mean, elegant and sturdy is a terrific description of Les Ferdinand.
Mm.
And also, I mean, obviously, the obvious point, fair play to these Besiktas fans for remembering a chant they had about a lone player 30 years ago.
Yeah, obviously made something of an impression. But the pivotal word here in the translation, Dave, seems to be koyar, which Google Translate spits out as puts. I have been reliably informed that it is actually some colloquial Turkish that means fucks you up. In a kind of physical kind of way.
Right. Okay. I thought it was referring to like scoring, putting the ball in or something.
No, that's what I thought, but no, I don't think so. It means more, he's going to fuck up the opposition.
Okay.
With his elegant, sturdy, flexible approach. the crux of all of this is that Les Ferdinand did appear on beIN Sports Turkey and was asked to sing the chant. And you know exactly how he delivered it. Rightly so.
This one, Mujde, Mujde, Size, Ferdinand, Mujde, Size.
Yes, I remember that well.
Tekrar söyler misin?
Mujde, Mujde, Size, Ferdinand, Mujde, Size.
There we go, that's better.
That is the absolute ceiling of enthusiasm someone can have for singing their own chant, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah. done with a smile on his face, and he gave it a little bit of melody in that second attempt.
Yeah.
Yep, that's good.
Yeah, just the right. I love Les Ferdinand. What a wonderful human being.
There was also a lovely bit in at the start of the Sky coverage where he explained that he wasn't actually a knight and that Sir Les was merely a nickname.
Yeah, he has to clarify this a lot, doesn't he? Yeah, it's a real shame.
Had the pleasure of meeting Les Ferdinand last year for an interview that we did with him. And some people, you meet them, and when you, like, just such a strong but impressive handshake.
Such a good handshake. Yeah. I've never been so sure of anything in my life, and I'm glad you've confirmed it. Another weird observation about Les Ferdinand that really struck me, Dave, when we were watching some of his highlights reel on Sky yesterday, I can't think of a footballer who's ever been so short and tall at the same time.
Yeah.
Incredibly proportioned footballer, but just gives the impression of being quite diminutive and sort of explosive off the mark, but also sort of massively dominant in the air as well. It blew my mind. It's not like an optical illusion. It really is.
They've nailed it. Elegant and sturdy.
Exactly right. Yeah. Brilliant player, brilliant man. Finally, at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, this is from Ash Frith, who was listening to the game on BBC Radio 5 Live. And the commentator, John Murray, was happy to pass on the good news from Bruno Guimaraes, but there was a final twist that we didn't know about.
That's just given possession back to Newcastle. Bruno Guimaraes, new father he is. The baby was born on Friday to Joe Linton.
Lovely.
That's the perils of sticking in some, sideline information in the middle of a passage of play. This is the sort of thing could ever, lives could be ruined, Nick.
It's like the sort of audio equivalent of when newspapers actually accidentally put pictures next to a headline saying, you know, 9 killed by rampant murderer, and then there's a picture of like you there next to it or something like that.
Still, fair play to Joe Linton. Didn't know he had it in his locker. Quite frankly,
that played to him for getting back on the pitch.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. I wish them both well. Anyway, right, the days are ticking down until the Football Clichés live show hits the road. We'll be at London's Earth on 8th of November. I barely a ticket left for that, as far as I understand. So if you are going to buy one, you might well find yourself very lucky. We're also at Manchester's New Century Hall on the 15th of November and Dublin's Liberty Hall Theatre on the 16th of November. Join us. It's going to be brilliant. I can't wait. Just go to myticket.co.uk or just Google Football Clichés Live.
Hello, it's Kate Borsay, Lindsay Hooper and Hayley McQueen here, otherwise known as The Offside Rule.
We have a very special show. It's been 10 years of The Offside Rule. If you've been enjoying it over the last decade, you can get some extra insight.
Yes, we have a really good chat about how the industry has changed in the 10 years and chat as well about some of the highs of recording a podcast as an only female trio in the football world and some of the lows as well. So join us for fun.
We're also joined by Harriet Drudge and Laura Williamson from The Athletic. So check it out. That's The Offside Rule.
To your ears by The Athletic. This is Football Clichés.
Right, welcome back to Football Clichés. Now, I want to kick off this second half with one of those questions that looks ludicrous at first glance, Nick, and then kind of gradually makes you question everything you've ever believed. This is from Dan Hall. He says, is it stop the rot or stop the rut? Please help. It's obviously rot, right?
It's rot. Yeah, it's rot.
But it does make you think. This could be a Segan segue situation, Dave, for me, but it's not. It's fine.
No. Stuck in a rut. You need to get out of the rut, really.
Yeah.
The rut will be there.
Yeah.
You're just in it. You need to get out of it.
It doesn't move, so there's nothing to stop. Agreed. Yeah. Straightforward. I mean, even doubting it is going to get me ridiculed, but I just want to do it for the purposes of that. Right. This is great. This is from Joe Tyler, who's watching Napoli against Roma on BT Sport on Sunday evening. And here's Nigel Spackman doing some textbook every angle of this goal co-commentary for Victor Osimhen's goal.
Lovely ball round the corner. His pace and his strength gets him away. What a finish that is. Chris Smalling thinks he's got it under control. He hasn't. Osimhen has. And what a finish that is.
Two.
Just waits for it to come down. Hits it across the goalkeeper with a bit of slice. What a finish that is for his fourth goal of the season.
It's almost like a song in the end, Dave. It's like repeating the chorus line at the end.
Refrain.
Yeah. Absolutely wonderful.
It was one of those goals. It did get better with each replay and with each angle. Yeah.
Amazing finish, but not sort of wonder goalie enough to warrant any other superlative. So what a finish that is basically the best way to describe it, Nick.
Clearly recognised there was nowhere to go, so he just kept repeating it.
It's a goal just of the right quality to have the co-commentary equivalent of just pointing at it and go, fucking look at this! Look at that. And rightly so, yeah. Just the repetitiveness was quite wonderful. This has blown my mind. I haven't got the clip of it. Sort of wish I had, but it's too late now. Dave, Andy Gerlis writes in and says, commentator Bill Leslie, during the Southampton-Arsenal game, said Big Mo, as it's sometimes called, to describe momentum. Has anyone ever heard this before? Big Mo? Nick's pointing his finger in the air.
I've heard this. The only time I've heard this is in an episode of The West Wing.
I thought you were going to say EastEnders, but fine.
No, when they were talking about a political campaign gaining momentum, and they were saying, we've got the Big Mo. But that's the only time, the only other context I've heard it in.
That's interesting, because I saw this, and Adam, when you put it on the running order, and I thought, I've never heard of this, but this is going to be, is this something that I'm just, you know, completely over my head, is some sort of new, sort of the kids are saying it or something, or it's just, you know, someone says it that I've got no awareness of or something like that. If it's from The West Wing, Bill Leslie strikes me as a bloke that could very much have worked his way through the West Wing box set a few times over the years. Road. Yeah.
Ah, maybe. Personally, not particularly keen on it, but we'll see how that develops over the years. It's got its cultural roots already, clearly, but I can't see it catching on. Now, get your imaginative minds ready for this one. Dave, Bobby Renson writes in and says, this post came from my team in my Sunday league. I can safely say I've never seen this before. Here we go. Callan Carroll made it 4 with a Panenka volley lob that gave the keeper no chance.
What the hell
could be a Panenka volley lob? It's essentially sort of a little dink over the keeper with the ball already in the air, I guess.
Yes, but the substitution of Panenka just to mean any kind of open play.
I mean, yeah, that's great.
Which is not happy with that. Volley lob, it's sort of one of those things that feels instinctively wrong, but you also know what it means.
Just violating all sorts of codes here. I mean, they don't know what it is. I'll just stick them all on there. Panenka, volley, lob.
Oh yeah, sure. No, that's no question. Is that the case? But if those three things could coexist, this is what the goal would look like. First of all, let's take it back to front. It's a lob, which means the ball was already in the air and it was over the keeper's head.
Yep.
So that's it. Those are the only ingredients you need for a lob. It can't be a chip, it's a lob. Now, it's a volley. So the ball was already in the air. We know that. It's a volley. And if we're taking it in its strictest sense, it has to be hit first time. The ball didn't bounce first. He didn't control it. So it was coming out of the sky and the goal scorer volleyed it. And it was a lob. So we can get our heads around that, right? That's okay. The ball came out of the sky, he lobbed it over the goalkeeper, and the keeper had no chance. Now, how can you add the Panenka? How can you add the spirit of a Panenka here? The only way you could do this is if, as the ball drops out of the sky, he fakes to absolutely smash it, like proper volley, take the netting out of the goal, but in doing so, then shifts his body shape to turn it into a cheeky little volley lob that goes over the goalkeeper's head and just skims down the back of the net. Now that, Nick Miller, could be a Panenka volley lob.
It sounds physically implausible. Someone's going to put their hip out trying to do this.
It takes a lot of disguise and lot of good timing.
If you imagine the Wayne Rooney volley against Newcastle, that's the sort of run-up I'm imagining for this. But then at the very last, you know, because that's what you've described pretty much.
Yeah, so going with laces and then at the last minute sort of just scooping it with the instep instead.
Yeah, I think so.
Excellent. Could be done.
Maybe it was.
Yeah.
Any footage? Any corroborating footage?
What if that was, by the way, says Nigel Smackman. Callan Carroll, I need to see a video of your goal. Right. This is a pleasant little bit from the EFL highlights of Sunderland versus Burnley. David McIntosh alerted me to this. And this is Anas Zarouri putting the visitors 3-2 ahead. Jack Woodward on comms.
Goodmanson, scorer in midweek, and now it's Zarouri who'll go for glory. And what a goal! Sensational.
My favourite thing about this, Nick, is that it couldn't have been rehearsed. Like it was a bolt out of the blue kind of goal. So it just came out of his brain just like that. Jack Woodward, you genius.
Yeah, I think he's. I think that is. I think he's got. He's had that written in the top corner of his notebook for a little while. If only the opportunity would present itself. I mean, it's great. I really like it. But
yeah, I don't know. I think there might be a sort of subconscious that might be in the back of your mind.
It's a kind of heavily signposted rhyme. As soon as you say the name, Dave, that one could then roll off your tongue straight away.
Quick thinking. It's just there, tip of the tongue.
Benefit of the doubt to Jack Woodward. But yeah, lovely stuff.
It sounds like a sort of like a kid's book about a superstar footballer from the kind of late 70s or something like that.
Anna Saruri goes for glory. Yeah.
Here on Jack and Ori.
Right. Reason for club suspending a player of the week. Here we go. The improbably named Forrest Lasso, a defender for Swedish strugglers at GIFT Sundsvall, who have actually been relegated from the Allsvenskan as of the weekend. They were playing Djurgården on Monday evening, Dave, and Forrest Lasso has been suspended by the club because on the day that their relegation was confirmed, he posted a video of his own highlights from the season.
Okay.
Is that bad? straight in there advertising his wares, knowing that he's been relegated. It's fine to me.
Would Jermaine Defoe have done that in whenever 2002 or 2003 when West Ham got relegated and he handed in the transfer request immediately after the final whistle?
Was it Jermaine Defoe?
It was Jermaine Defoe and Pascal Chimbonda.
I was thinking of Chimbonda, but Chimbonda was a relegation one as well, wasn't it?
Didn't he sort of have the letter, his transfer request letter in his sock or something?
It
does sound apocryphal, but that was the story. But yeah, this is the sort of the kind of, I don't know, 2022 version of that, I think, isn't it?
Apparently, the fans got really annoyed by this, Nick.
Yeah, understandably so. Just wait. You can wait a few. Let the dust settle. Don't put it straight out there. Come on.
I'm led to believe he has something of a history with erratic social media this season, so perhaps that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Club suspended him for this.
So they sort of left him out of the squad for the game against Djurgården. But more time for him to go and find a new club, presumably, get himself on LinkedIn, sort his life out. Anyway, time for Keys and Grey Corner. Sunday. Now, lots of Keys and Grey ammunition for us to load up this week, but I decided to be quite selective because their guest on the podcast this week was Big Sam. Now, there's not really much we can conceivably say about the prospect of this, so here's just the entire episode condensed into 2 minutes.
Then there was Joe 90.
I remember Joe 90 with the glasses.
There was
magic
Captain
glasses.
Captain Scarlet
and the Mister Ones.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Don't forget when that circle used to travel over. Remember? What were you like?
Gerard.
Happy
sacked.
Days.
Gerard sacked.
Yeah.
Howard Webb will be in charge of VAR on Boxing Day.
Oh wow! The return of the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, let's hope. I mean, the current incumbent is hopeless.
Terrible.
Hopeless.
Terrible.
Kynan Isaac. How are you doing, big man?
Very good, thank you. I'm chilling out in Dubai, as you all know, lads. One of my favourite places.
And, one thing you're not doing in Dubai, Sam, is chilling. That's definitely not a word you do.
Very good.
6.5 hours in first class, Sam.
Such a hardship, Sam.
The Dom Perignon's very nice.
Sam sits there and goes, "Where did it go wrong in my life?"
We're only following the Europeans.
Yeah, that's true.
What would your advice to Stephen be? Because the game is being infiltrated with school teachers. Ex-pros that don't need to work are being sidelined. That's a danger, surely.
This is what we're faced with, gentlemen, or ladies and gentlemen, or persons. Trying to be politically correct again. But,
and we've taken enough of your time. It's a glorious day.
Yes, it's
here
a lovely day, and Sam's an hour ahead of us.
Yes, go and sit yourself by the pool and give our apologies to Mrs. Allardyce for interrupting her holiday.
Is it?
Well, come and see us during the World Cup. We'll have brunch.
Well, don't forget to invite me then.
Well done.
Yeah, we'll work on it, Sam.
Enjoy the day, big man.
Steve. Have a great day, pal.
All right.
Cheers, mate.
Bye. He's still good value. You know, that's the one thing you can't buy in life, experience.
No, you can buy it, no.
He's been around the block.
He's been around the block, yeah.
All the boxes ticked there, Dave, really, isn't it? Not a single box left unticked.
Astonishing.
Did you like the start where they were just talking about stringed puppet-based...
Gerry Anderson creations.
Anyway, yes. Gerrard sacked.
Yeah. Brilliant, yeah. Yeah, I like those. Most of my favourite Keys and Grey bits, actually, the handbrake non sequiturs. We haven't had one of those for a while.
It's obviously not the kind of highlight, but Keezy inviting him for brunch was not the social occasion I was expecting for those three. A beer or something. Or,
oh, they're big on their brunch.
Are they big? Oh, they.
Yeah, the Saturday brunch in Doha is like the thing to be seen at.
Oh, okay.
I understand.
Right. Fair enough.
Or is it the Friday? No, it's the Friday brunch in Doha is their big deal, their big part of their week, as far as I understand it. El Vino must surely flow at that brunch. Next up, just in case you were worried that Keezy'd run out of material, that he was just going over the same ground over and over and over again, here he is on Mikel Arteta.
Stay in your technical area.
No chance. No chance.
Well, then somebody should put it
we know
in
that.
His technical area.
We know that.
It's dangerous, Andy. There's a reason that they're away from the touchline.
How? How can you still be going on about it? It's astonishing.
What's his solution to this going to be, like, to put Mikel Arteta on some kind of bungee cord or something that doesn't let him go further than the technical area? But the thing that really doesn't make sense in all this is that the technical area is one of those things that Keezy would surely have railed against as, you know, health and safety gone mad or something like that. So
little white line, dotted white lines, Jobsworths. Whose job is it to paint those, Andy? Anyway, interesting, Nick, that you proposed some sort of nonsensical, absurd solution to Mikel Arteta leaving his technical area. Someone else has alerted me to the fact that the NFL have been dealing with this issue for decades. They have something called get-back coaches.
Wow.
Dave, are you familiar with this concept?
No, not at all.
Get-back coaches. Usually it's the strength and conditioning coach because they're the henchiest member of the backroom staff. And their job during matches is to stop the head coach from leaving their technical area or whatever the equivalent of the NFL is, so they don't get penalties or whatever. And they do that for the entire game. And here's a clip from an NFL video detailing this very particular job.
I literally have to spend most of my time while the offense is on the field standing right behind Sean and ripping him out of the way when the official's about to run into him just so we don't get a penalty. There is an art to it. It is kind of like a dance. Maybe tango, like a sidestep into the path of the official and then remove back.
So there we go. That's what
Arsenal
need.
Imagine if Arsenal, they've got to get back coach, Andy. Oh, sounds like an easy gig to me. How much are you getting paid?
Get Baldy back in to do some get back coaching, Nick. I think it'd be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely ideal. The dance, of course, got Tony Adams because he's well-placed to do that now.
Absolutely right. But yeah, that could be the solution to all of our problems, so we never have to hear about this once again. Thanks to you, David Walker, for adjudication panelling today.
Thank you.
Likewise, Nick Miller. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with the Football Clichés Quiz 6.